Welcome to the MMA Roadshow, episode number 107. My name is John Morgan. Cold Coffee? Well, Cold Coffee's not with me this week, damn it. I'm rolling solo in Las Vegas. Cold Coffee got to take himself to Kansas City for UFC on Fox 24. That is an amazing card. Matt Erickson is up there. The new guy, Simon Samana, was up there as well, getting a little event experience, seeing what it's like to run things on the road. So those three are out there, and I'm enjoying one last week at home with the wife and kid finally back in Las Vegas. So we are split up for one more week, but we'll be back together next week in Nashville. And the big junkie himself, Mr. Stand Up, will also be out there as well for UFC Fight Night 108. But in the meantime, I am running solo, and let me just say, I have been itching to get this damn headset on and to start talking some MMA. Of all the weeks to not have an and a half episode, it had to be this week, right? Damn it. Damn it. UFC 210 was awesome, man. And it was awesome from the fact that it was entertaining and also because there was severe controversy as well. And unfortunately, due to the work and personal schedule that myself and Cold Coffee had, we could not get together to do that and a half episode. And man, of all the damn weeks, it's been a week now, so I'm not going to bore you guys with talking about that. I know everybody all week long, all the podcasts you listen to, everybody you talk to, everybody's talking about it. So I'm not going to sit here and relive through everything. But I did have to touch on a couple things. First of all, let's just talk about the result in the main event. You know, I was leaning Anthony Johnson going into that fight, and I probably should have known, right? I mean, we should have seen the result coming. To everybody that picked Daniel Cormier, feel free to point at me and say I told you so. It's a fight that we saw play out before, and, you know, as I said from the beginning, I think it was clear to see that it could very easily play that way out. Or play out that way again, I should say. So probably should have seen it coming. But, man, Anthony Johnson had just looked so good leading up to that fight and his past results. I thought, man, he's finally going to get it. He's so dangerous. But, you know, the other thing I thought was the guy with one foot out the door was Daniel Cormier. And little did we know, the guy that really had one foot out the door was Anthony Johnson. Says he was going to retire, win or lose. So maybe he was the one that was kind of half-assing it, man. It's I don't know, man. I'm bummed to see Anthony Johnson walk away. I think that guy is exciting. Certainly a top-ranked light heavyweight. I mean, amazing to see what that division has turned into in the UFC. I hate to see him hang it up, but Daniel Cormier, man. What a performance he had, you know, to win this fight and then to set up basically two fights at once. Can't blame him, really, for trying to set up the Jimmy Manoa fight, right? I mean, if you can avoid fighting John Jones, maybe get you one more paycheck in time, especially if John Jones isn't going to fight at International Fight Week. Maybe Daniel Cormier thinks he could slip one in the summertime. I don't think he's trying to avoid John Jones, but why not have a backup plan in place, right? Have another fight ready to go. So good for Daniel Cormier for, you know, playing the villain role and setting up a couple fights. I did want to touch on the weigh-ins, you know, that people have been talking about all week long. Bottom line, Daniel Cormier was wrong. You can't be on the scale and touch the towels like that and put your hands on the towels. I know I talked to Cold Coffee this week, and I know, you know, he in reviewing that footage feels the same way. I mean, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to see that you can see the tension that's on the towel when he lets go. You can see the way the towel, you know, returns back up. So I mean, there was definitely some pressure on there. And I guess what I want to say about it is this: you know, first of all, did that factor into the fight? I don't think so. I mean, Cormier's weight cut was hard, but it wasn't like he didn't have any more weight to lose. I think he could have gotten down to weight in the next 2 hours. He certainly didn't look good, man. If you saw that embedded where he said, "This is my last fight at light heavyweight," he's since, you know, kind of come back on that and said, no, I'm going to fight again at light heavyweight. You know, obviously that was just a knee-jerk reaction for emotion, but if you saw that embedded, man, he looked rough. And I'm glad they showed that. You know, the UFC for a long time has said you can't show the weight cut in their internal documents, and I think they probably still feel that way. You know, I don't think it's anything they want to shine a light on. You know, it's a dangerous part of the sport. It's a hard part of the sport. But I like when they allow images like that in there, because I thought it was powerful to see what he had gone through. But I think he still could have made light heavyweight. But I guess what I want to say here is that this is that I don't think we can guess Daniel Cormier's intent. You know, he said he was trying to cover himself up. Come on, man. I don't know if I buy that, especially the fact that you pushed down on it, not pulled up on it. He said he didn't know that was a wrestling trick. I mean, I don't know what Daniel Cormier's seen. He's been wrestling his whole life. I would be shocked to think that, you know, he's never, you know, never seen that the towel trick, so to speak. But maybe he hasn't. Maybe he hasn't. So I don't know that we can ever fully know what his intent was. But what I can know is that I think he was wrong. But I think it was the commission that screwed up. You know, the New York State Athletic Commission, they're having growing pains. And I think this is one where they clearly dropped the ball. I do like the fact that the commissioner spoke with the media afterwards. You know, if you saw that video, we had it up on MMA Junkie. Justin Park was up there, and Matt Erickson was up there in Buffalo, New York. We had it up. I like the fact that the commission member talked about it. I thought his answers were kind of bad. I don't think he was clear. I think what we got to do is figure out a way that there's one-on-one conversations. The way they do it in other sports, my understanding, is that, you know, when the officials are made available to the media, you have basically like one pool member, basically where one person of the media is selected, and I think it's kind of rotated through by the outlet or whatever, you know, per season. And we could easily do that, where one person gets to go ask the questions, and then that information is given to the remainder of the media. I think that'd be great. Because listen, I mean, as a commission member, you're not used to doing interviews and, you know, stand up there with 10 cameras in your face and a bunch of people asking questions. I get that that's got to be a little bit tough. Maybe they're going to stammer over their words a little bit. Maybe they're going to answer something wrong. You know, I think he misunderstood some of the questions he was being asked, to be honest with you. So, but maybe if it was a one-on-one conversation. And, you know, maybe one week it's MMA Junkie, and the next week it's MMA Fighting, and the next week it's Sherdog, and the next week it's MMA Weekly, and the next week, you know, you just go on, you know, and you know, a different media member each week is the person that has access to the officials. I'd love to see something like that. I would love to see the officials, you know, be more engaging. And if it's a little bit overwhelming to have them come to a press conference or to have them stand in front of a bunch of media, maybe we have them stand in front of one, and that person is trusted in, you know, answering or asking the questions that we all want the answers to. So, but the bottom line is I think the commission screwed up. And I think they'll probably make sure it doesn't happen again. I mean, that's the whole point, is that nobody should be touching anything. You know, you when you're on that scale, you can't be leaning on your training partner. You can't be, you know, even shifting the weight on your feet, you know, like where you're standing on your toes or something like that. I mean, you've got to have your weight on the scale the way it is. And it's got to be a red flag to anybody that 1.6 pounds gets lost in 2 minutes. Come on. Come on, that's a huge red flag. So, but I guess the way I feel leaving this is that the New York Commission screwed up. I again, you know, I've said it over the years, so many times where people talk conspiracies and that sort of thing, I think it's ineptitude oftentimes way more than it is conspiracies, and I think that's definitely the case here. I just think they made a mistake, and I think they're making, you know, it's growing pains of a growing commission, but they've got to fix it. They got to get that right. And I take nothing away from Daniel Cormier. Hey, in the state of mind he's in, even if he did it on purpose, I don't blame him. If you can game the system, man, when you're hurting like that, I don't blame you for trying. You know, if you're not cheating, you're not trying, right? But it's the commission's job to make sure it doesn't happen. So hopefully they can learn lessons from this. And hopefully they can learn lessons from the co-main event with Gegard Mousasi picking up the win over Chris Weidman. Again, I don't want to spend a ton of time on this because I know you guys have been hearing people give their takes all week long. And we screwed up, damn it. We should have had our and a half episode and you could have heard from us then. But I just kind of want to go on record, I guess, for anybody that does care what my opinion is. I do think the knee was clearly legal. At best, there was, you know, fingertips from the second hand on there. And we know now under the new rules that it's got to be two hands or two fists. So I think the knee was legal, but I think this, the bigger thing is it just points out that the inconsistency here is an issue. And, you know, New Jersey has since come out and said, hey, listen, man, you know, we didn't adopt these new rules and this is exactly why. And this shows that this was a stupid rule and we need to rescind the rule. And I'm sure they'll be talking about it, at the Association of Boxing Commissions convention, which is this summer, this July, out at Mohegan Sun. I'm sure they're going to be talking about it. But to me, and I've said it all along, I think part of the problem is not that the rule is bad. I think the intent of the rule is good. And I think, honestly, Dan probably just made a mistake here. But to me, I think the inconsistency from state to state has to factor in here. I mean, Dan is one of those referees that travels from state to state and is constantly dealing now with different rules on a weekly basis. And you're having to make these bang-bang judgments, right? I mean, just split-second decisions that you've got to make. You don't have time to think about where you are and to factor in. You know, you just don't have time. It needs to be automatic. Fighter safety is paramount right here, and these decisions need to be made in rapid-fire fashion, and they need to be automatic. It needs to be second nature. That's why the guys that get the most reps, you know, continue to be the best. They get the most practice at it. Dan screwed up here, but I do wonder how much of a factor it had to be with the changing rules. Now, once it got stopped, I do think the doctor was right for stopping it. You know, I'm sure by now you guys have all had a chance to go check out the audio that's out there. You know, you can hear quite a bit of it. And I don't think Chris was right, man. I think that knee affected him pretty bad. He seemed a little bit out of it to me. And so I think the doctor's right. I think Chris is probably dealing with some concussion-like issues there. And if that's the case, man, you don't want to send a guy back out there. And as we're learning about brain health, you know, it's not that initial blow. It's what happens afterwards. He needs to let his brain rest. And I think the doctor was right for stopping it. But then you get the whole issue of instant replay. And again, you know, I don't think anybody's being shady. I think they're trying to do the best they can. But, you know, if Dan sticks with the call, then technically it would be a no contest because, you know, it would be a foul that ends the fight. But I don't think it was an intentional foul on Musasi's part. I doubt he could even see the hands, to be honest with you, from the positioning of the bodies. So if anything, it's an unintentional foul, and I think it would end up being a no contest, which, you know, still probably doesn't, you know, it's still probably a bitter taste in everybody's mouth if it's a no contest, but a lot easier for Chris Weidman to deal with than his third straight loss. So, you know, I don't know that no contest was any better. I think the TKO was the right call, believe it or not. You know, I think the knee was legal. I think Chris Weidman couldn't continue, so I think TKO was the right call here. That said, I don't think Dan should have stopped the fight. I think it should have kept going. So, you know, I think it's the right call given the screw-up. But, you know, I kind of wish maybe Dan would have been just like, hey, I screwed up. We're going to restart this fight. If the doctor had said he could continue, which he couldn't, so shitty situation, man. There's just no easier way to put it than that. And I say, go with the rematch. I know Gegard is saying he doesn't want the rematch. There's no reason to do it. But for me, go with the rematch, man. I think Gegard's coming back. I know he's a free agent, but I do believe the UFC will sign him. That is not from any inside information, but it's just my feel. You know, I think it's fairly obvious when they're happy to let somebody go. And when they want to keep somebody. And I think this is Gegard Mousasi is a fighter they want to keep. You know, they're still developing the market in the Netherlands. They've got a show there later this fall. I don't know if, you know, he'll headline that show, but certainly they want to keep developing the market, and he's got some ties there. Also, that middleweight division is looking good, and I think Gegard's fighting better than ever. He's starting to get verbal. I think he's more marketable than ever. You know, I think there's a lot of reasons to keep Gegard Mousasi around, and the fact that, you know, Dana has come out and said he's a fan of Gegard Mousasi, and like it or not, Dana still has significant influence in this company. If he likes a fighter, he's going to work for him. You know, he's said before, and other people have said before, kind of behind the scenes, like, listen, we'll never lose a free agent unless we just are cool with letting him go. You know, I don't think Gegard is a guy they're cool with letting go. So I think he's coming back. And to me, you know, unless it's an interim title fight, Yoel Romero is not going to fight. And I don't know that it makes sense to do an interim title fight. I mean, the title is going to be on the line, right? Michael Bisping versus George St. Pierre. And I don't think we need more damn interim title fights. So I think Romero's going to sit. And I don't blame him. I don't blame him for sitting. So if he's going to sit, what's Gegard got? That's the top guys right there, right? I mean, we got to get through Whitaker and Shocker Ray this weekend. Maybe there's something there. But to me, I don't know. The way things are lining up, I say just run it back. Just run it back. Do it again. That's what I'd like to see. I know Gegard may not like it. But, you know, I think if that's the only option that's presented to him, I think you could sell it to him. I mean, I thought he was very respectful and humble. I love the fact that he kind of told his corner to stop celebrating. I thought that was, you know, a classy move on Gegard's part. So I'd like to see the rematch. We'll see what happens. Got to feel bad for Chris Weidman. I mean, we talked about going into that fight, all that was on the line. And for it in that way, not just in a loss, but for it in such bizarre fashion, it just had to be absolutely heartbreaking for him. So, I mean, we saw the frustration, but gosh, you've heard the frustration from his team. You know, Matt Serra, obviously, if you listen to the UFC Unfiltered podcast, he was frustrated. Certainly Ray Longo, if you listen to the Anakin Florian podcast where Ray Longo does the Ray Longo minute, he was pissed. So the frustration lasts. So anyway, I don't want to talk about too much 210. Like I said, it was a fun card. We said it was going to be fun. It did end up being fun. I guess I should say real quick, I will say Dana White upset me on Saturday, and I wish I would have been there because his whole thing about not listening to the media, that was wrong. Okay, I know what he's saying, but the fact of the matter is the commission told the media the fight was off. The commission told the fighters the fight was off. And I'm glad the UFC, and of course we're talking about Cynthia Calvillo and Pearl Gonzalez. I'm glad that the UFC continued to work diligently behind the scenes to save that fight. And kudos to them for getting it, you know, done, saving the fight, making sure it was on. But for Dana to slam everybody and act like, you know, it was false reporting and people were rushing to judgment. No, people were saying what the camps had been told, what the commission was saying, the news was right. So I wish I would have been there. I had somebody at the press conference did kind of challenge him a little bit, but didn't push it too far. But, yeah, I hated to hear that, man. I hated to hear him slam everybody. I just didn't think that was necessary. So I get where he's coming from. It pisses him off, especially – I know a lot of the things that really upsets the UFC is when they're trying to work on something, whether it be, say, like a fight that they're trying to make or a contract deal that they're trying to get done. Or maybe something like this where they're trying to get the bout saved. And then the media reports on it, and it changes things. You know, people that are involved, you know, let's say, like, nobody ever knew that the fight was supposed to be canceled, and the commission could easily make a decision behind the scenes that nobody ever hears about. And they go, okay, well, hell, you know, I know we said we got that rule, but, well, nobody knows we have that rule. Let's just make this fight happen, you know? Same thing with a fight, for instance. You know, like they get two fighters to agree to fight, and then it's and nobody ever hears about it until it's announced and it's done, it's official. But sometimes things leak out in the media, and then public opinion goes one way, or people feel pressure. You know, and I know that's why the UFC doesn't like things getting out, and that's why they say, you know, don't listen unless it comes from us. Don't listen unless it comes from us. That's of course why they want to say it. They want to control the message, and you know, a lot of times when people do get involved in the middle of negotiations, things get screwed up, deals get screwed up, fights get lost, contracts get lost. Maybe the bout had gotten lost. What if New York had dug in and said, dude, I don't care what the UFC is saying. We already told the public that this thing wasn't going, you know, to happen. We can't go back on our own word. And then the commission feels like they're painted into a corner and they have to cancel the fight. That's the type of situation the UFC is looking to avoid. And I get it. I respect them for that. And I'm glad that they got this fight to happen. But I thought it was wrong for Dana to kind of slam the media and act like the reports weren't right, because that was the information that was given. So, anyway, but it was a fun card, man. Thiago Alves, retiring Patrick Cote, Charles Oliveira looking amazing, man. Will Brooks struggled in his UFC run. Miles Jury looked awesome. Kamaru Usman, another decision, but, man, that dude is a force. You know, of course, I've really been following that guy's career since I got to deal with him a little bit down at Titan when I was doing some commentating for them. It's been fun to watch him kind of grow his career. So, yeah, fun fights all around. It really was a good night of fights. And, yeah, I watched it on TV. all right, let's – so, like I said, we couldn't do the and a half episode because we had to work, myself and Cold Coffee. And it's been a busy week ever since Monday. Actually got to go to L.A. For a media lunch out there with Demetrius Johnson, Michelle Waterson, both fighting this weekend at UFC on Fox 24. They had a luncheon out there. Not the most attended luncheon, I'll be honest with you. Probably understandable, I guess. You know, this is not a Conor McGregor. This is not a Ronda Rousey. So the mainstream media that we see a lot of times, I think it was, you know, opening week too for baseball and some of the local sports media. Of course, Southern California, they got a couple teams to worry about. So, I think some of the mainstream sports media that we see at times wasn't able to attend. But it was good, man. It was fun. We got to talk to both of them kind of one-on-one for about 20 minutes or so. If you want to, the whole discussions for both those fighters is up on the MMA Junkie YouTube channel. So we've got the full 20-minute discussions there with each of them. Wide-ranging of topics, as you would expect. Demetrius Johnson, of course, fighting Wilson Hayes. Demetrius sitting on the edge of history, man. 10 straight title defenses. If he wins, he would tie Anderson Silva's record. And listen, I know people say that he doesn't have competition, but I disagree, man. I disagree. And I'm assuming if you're listening to this podcast, you're probably a hardcore MMA fan, so maybe you disagree too. But I see it in our comment sections and, you know, just, he sucks, and I don't care about the flyweight division. I just don't get it. To me, the flyweight division is incredibly exciting, and he's a great fighter. To me, the top pound-for-pound fighter on the planet, and he's beaten some absolute beasts. And Wilson Hayes, you know, disrespect there as well. You know, a lot of people, who's this guy, never heard of him. I think that's sad. I think Wilson Hayes is a lot better fighter than people are giving him credit for. I think the other thing that's awesome about him is that, you know, Wilson was granted the title shot, and then through circumstances that weren't his own fault, Demetrius Johnson got hurt, and Wilson fought not just once, but twice. Fought Hector Sandoval, fought Oka Sasaki, who I'm big on Oka Sasaki. I think he's dangerous. I think Sandoval's dangerous too. Definitely unknown, but certainly tough fighters. And Hayes beat both of them, you know, and got his way back to this title shot. I think he's tougher than most people give him credit for. That said, of course, you can't pick against Demetrius Johnson. You can't. There's just no way to do it. With what he's accomplished in the flyweight division and showing no signs of slowing down, anything is possible, of course, in mixed martial arts. That's what makes it so fun. But you got to pick Demetrius Johnson. But, what an accomplishment this would be to tie that long-standing record of 10 title defenses in a row. That's just, I'm afraid that people aren't going to give Demetrius Johnson the respect that he deserves if he does accomplish it, because, you know, people do hate on the flyweights. But you look at the names he's beaten, man. He's beaten everybody in the division. It's not like he's avoiding anybody. He's beat, you know, the consensus, you know, perennial number one contender, Joseph Benavidez, twice. He's not ducking anybody. So, I don't know, man. I think the flyweight division is talented. I think, honestly, if you say it's not, you're insulting Demetrius Johnson. You're taking away from what he's accomplished. So, anxious to see that, to see if he's able to accomplish history. Also, Michelle Waterson was fantastic as well. She's so great. You know, of course, she's got an awesome story. Gets emotional talking about the sacrifices that her husband has made to further her career. And, of course, we know about, you know, balancing the role as a mother, which, I struggle to balance a role as a journalist and a father, much less a professional fighter. Very cool there. And the Fight Mom documentary that was shown again and is on Fight Pass if you want to watch it, man. It's a very cool look into her life. But she's such a great representative of the sport and very professional, very polished. And I thought it was cool because talking about kind of the drive she has as a martial artist, it sucks because if you watch the luncheon, I said we've got the whole session. You know, I'm not really a good videographer. That's cold coffee. I've learned to use a camera, but I screw up sometimes. And I accidentally forgot to clear a memory card while we were at the luncheon, and I missed about 60 seconds of the luncheon with Michelle just because the second card, or the card that I was using was full, and I had to switch out to a second memory card on my camera. So I'm an idiot. I forgot to check it. I'll never do that again. But she gave a great answer, and it's fine because she said so many other wonderful things that we wrote a lot of different stories about it this week on MMA Junkie. But she had this awesome quote where she talked about the fact that WMEIMG is now her she's now represented by WMEIMG, which I didn't know. I don't necessarily keep track of who all is signing with them. And, of course, when they sign with WMEIMG, just to clear this up, if you weren't aware of this, they're not allowed to represent that athlete then in their salary negotiations. because obviously that would be WMEIMG negotiating with WMEIMG, and that would be a conflict of interest. So if you hear about anybody signing with WMEIMG and you wonder, well, how the hell does that work? Is that a conflict of interest? That's why, you know, it's not. They don't negotiate for fight purses. So what they do is open doors in Hollywood like nobody else can do. And so Michelle Waterson said that she is repped by WMIMG. Now they are looking at opportunities for her. And I asked her, I said, you know, listen, I mean, doesn't that, you know, the fact that they've got great things going on here, you know, what if they came to you and said, check this out. We've got a $150 million deal for you. This you know, Hollywood movie company, they want to sign you for a 5-picture deal. I don't know, that's probably even too much money, but whatever. A 10-picture deal. but, you know, because she said she wants to do some action movies. She, you know, she'd love to do some of that stuff. But the caveat I threw out there was they want you to quit fighting now because they're investing so much money in you. They don't want their star getting punched in the face. Would you do it? And it was funny because Demetrius Johnson was standing behind us at the time, and he starts yelling out. He's like, do it! Walk away! Hell yes, you take the deal! and it was funny because she thought about it, and she was like, she's like, well, yeah, I mean, I'd probably have to. I mean, how do you turn down that kind of money? You know, it's not like you're doing something illegal for it. You know, you're just doing something else. So, yeah, I definitely have to do it. But, man, I would probably always in the back of my head say, what if, you know, I wanted to be UFC champion? What if, damn it, what if? So I thought that was cool to hear her drive. And she also openly admitted, you know, she not only wants to be the champ, she wants to beat Joanna Jędrzejczyk to do it. She said, look, how cool is that? I want to beat the one that's undefeated. I want to fight the toughest one out there, and that's what I want. You know, I don't want her to lose to you know, Jessica Andrade or something along that. I said, no, I want to beat her to do it. I want to be the first one. So very cool stuff there, man. She's all class. She's got a tough fight with Rose Namajunas, man. I love this fight. I picked Michelle Waterson in my staff pick, but, man, I feel like that fight could go either way. So anxious for that. You know, excuse me, talked about Demetrius Johnson there. I'm choking. Sitting here by myself choking. Ugh. Just wash that down with a little award-winning Pabst Blue Ribbon. All right. Yeah, love the fact that Demetrius Johnson's personality is coming out as well. You know, if you follow him on Twitch, which I do not, I'm not a big video game streaming guy, but I think he shows a lot of it there, but he's really showing a lot of his personality. I think there's great stuff there. And he had some great stuff to say, too, you know, talking about kind of the fact that he doesn't mind not being the super popular guy. He kind of enjoys flying under the radar a little bit, and also said, you know, he gets the fact that you know, this is the day and age of the Conor McGregor era of how to make money. He's like, but that's just not me, and I'm not gonna I'm not gonna be untrue to myself in an effort to make more cash. So that was great. He did welcome a fight with Cody Garbrandt as well. So, man, that'd be bonkers. I mean, I obviously want to see Cody Garbrandt fight T.J. Dillashaw first, and more on that in just a second. All right. Something else I got to do this week, Victory FC 56. If you've paid attention this week, I've actually had a couple pieces on Victory FC. We teased it last week. Again, I kind of want to get back to writing about some prospects, you know, and I don't know, look into some of the regional scene. I enjoy telling stories about fighters that maybe you don't know yet, and was able to do a little bit of that this week. And, you know, I could write a story about what Conor McGregor had for breakfast and get 10 times the amount of clicks any of these stories are going to do, but I like telling them, and I like maybe putting some new people on your radar. So one of the guys I got to talk to was Rafion Stotts. He's actually headlining Victory FC 56. If you're listening to this on Friday when it posts, that fight is going to be tonight on UFC Fight Pass. If you're listening to it later in the week, well, it already happened, but go back and watch it on UFC Fight Pass. He is fighting Robert Emerson in the main event of Victory FC 56. The bantamweight title's on the line. Robert Emerson, you remember that name, right? Old school UFC. He's actually a 2-division champion in Victory FC. He's got the 135-pound and 145-pound belt. He's put the bantamweight division title on the line against Rafion Stotts, who's undefeated. His story is on MMA Junkie. We have one of his full fights, a high kick knockout. His first knockout from his career is posted in full on MMA Junkie, and also wrote a little story about him as well. Guy has an incredible lineage, man, in the sport. So thought I would also, in case you didn't have a chance to check out any of that, let you listen to a little bit of Rafion Stotts, a fellow Texas native. He was actually born in Houston, ended up going to school up in Kansas, and I believe now calls Wisconsin home. He trains with the Rufus Sport, but I thought I'd let you listen to a little bit of Rafion Stotts. Well, let's talk about it, brother. I mean, haven't even been fighting professionally for 2 full years yet, and yet all this buzz is about you, man. People are talking about, you know, maybe the UFC in your near future. What's the ride been like for you so far, man?
You know, it's been pretty good so far. I'm on the fast track, and that's the way I like it, you know. Yeah, I've been pretty good. I feel like I've been progressing, you know, as a fighter and a person pretty fast, so I can't really complain so far, at least.
No doubt. Well, let's talk about how you started in mixed martial arts. Obviously, I know you boast a collegiate wrestling background, but you know, did you always know you were going to try your hand at MMA, or how did you come to that decision?
No, actually, when I was in Kearney, Nebraska, I was coaching wrestling, and one of my best friends, Josh Smith, he's also a fighter out of American Top Team. He was helping out at the gym with Jens Pover. And in Kearney, Nebraska, and then Jens Pover asked me to come out just to kind of run some wrestling practices to help out with the guys for wrestling. And I eventually started taking like BJJ classes with him, and then he started holding mitts for me and doing some boxing classes with me, and he convinced me to start fighting pretty much.
Wow, that's incredible. That's not a bad lineage to have there.
Yeah, no, I've been pretty blessed with the lineage. So I started under Vince Pover, then we moved out to Iowa. So I trained a little bit under Pat Militich, and then Pat Militich led me in the direction of Duke Rufus.
That's incredible.
Been pretty blessed.
That's incredible, man. Well, talk about the progress you've made, because, you know, I feel in watching you fight, you know, certainly your wrestling skills are there, but in watching you, it doesn't seem like you feel like you've got to use those wrestling skills all the time. It seems like you're fairly comfortable on the feet. So, you know, talk about your development as a complete mixed martial artist and kind of how you feel as an athlete.
You know, I feel amazing. And the thing with striking is so fun. So it's hard to not strike with somebody. So, but that's one thing, you know, I kind of pride myself in being a well-rounded mixed martial artist. So I'm pretty comfortable wherever the fight goes. So if it goes to the ground, I'm comfortable there. I've got techniques. I've got stuff that I like working, you know, I'm comfortable being uncomfortable pretty much in any situation. And that's the way I like, you know, to fight. That's the way I would, for me to see myself as a fighter. That's the way I want people to see me, as a well-rounded fighter, like kind of like a Demetrius Johnson. Like you got to be good at everything to beat me, because if any mistake you make, I'm taking opportunities to close the deal and capitalize.
That's awesome. You've had some highlight reel finishes and victory for sure, but your last fight, you know, a decision, but against a veteran in Jeff Curran. What did you take out of that fight? I mean, I'm sure you're always looking for the finish, but it is a guy that's been around the sport forever. What'd you take?
Man, that's exactly right, man. I'm looking for the finish so bad, but you know, he's a veteran. He's freaking versatile. Kind of anywhere we went, he was able to defend off a lot of my strikes. I mean, that's a good fight for me, because it lets me know, you know, that I can dominate these top level athletes. And when it comes to fighting, I had a little bit of stuff I could work on, but now see, and I was able to fix some of the kind of mistakes I would make against that type of fighter. So that was a good fight for me. I mean, Jeff Curran, you know, fought everywhere, fought all over the world. He's fought in the UFC. You know, he's he was definitely an athlete. Or when coming into that fight, you know, you always have, like, you know, not doubts, but like, you know, okay, hey, I'm here. Let's see what I really got, you know. And that fight really told me, or it kind of reaffirmed to me that, man, I'm a top level athlete, and I'm ready to make my stride.
That's awesome. Well, you get another one of those guys with Robert Emerson, a dude that's certainly been around forever, seen it all, done it all. You know, he's holding two belts right now, which is impressive. What do you think about him as a fighter?
As a fighter, I think he's a hard nose. I mean, he's an awesome fighter. You know, if I wasn't fighting him, I'd be a fan of him. You know, he's an awesome fighter. But as far as me fighting him or the matchup between me and him, I just feel like I'm a little more versed everywhere. And he's at a point in his career where he's got a set of skills that have worked well for him in the past and have worked well for him, but he's like tried and true to the set of skills he has that that's also been the downfall in a lot of his fights. So I just feel like I'm able to adapt kind of as the fight progresses. Where he's coming to do. He's coming to try to knock your head off. Mm-hmm. He's pretty versed on the ground, you know. But he's coming to knock your head off, which is awesome for me. You know, I'm ready to bang. You know, I've been putting in a lot of work on my striking, a lot of work on my on the bag, and I'm ready to, you know, give somebody a night with these hands. You know, I gave somebody a shin to the face. I'm looking to put these hands on them, you know.
Well, I mean, if you win here, Rafael, you said it. I mean, you said you're not afraid of the fast track, so I guess maybe that answers my question. But, I mean, I think people really believe you do have the talent to compete at the next level in the UFC. But, again, I mean, only fighting professionally for 2 years. So, you know, if that phone rings, you know, after a win this weekend, I mean, are you excited and saying, hell yes? Are you saying, maybe I need one or two more just to get myself ready? What's your reaction? Do you have your eyes set on the UFC right now?
You know, about actually like a year ago or so, I was at that point where I was like, you know what? Like, people say I'm good, you know, I feel good, but I don't feel like I'm ready. Because when I say I'm ready to go to the UFC, that means I'm ready to take on the UFC champion, you know? I don't need to duck fights. I can fight whoever, whenever, and I'm ready to do that. So as of now, in this final, prove that for me and hopefully the world, that I feel like I'm ready to make that step, make that jump that I've gone and make the rain there and start, you know, knocking heads off. Where I'm at Duke Rufus's gym, you know, I have a lot of guys with a lot of experience. And I also, you know, I'm a student of the game and I'm a student of my fellow fighters. So I pay attention to a lot of the, like, daily, the in and out stuff that, you know, champions like Anthony Pettis did, you know, Tyron Woodley. You know, I'm working out with these guys day in and day out, and I'm seeing the process, and that's why I believe I was able to kind of jump and skip over a lot of these guys, because I'm putting in the work like the champs do, and I'm taking heed to kind of every you know, mistake and victory, you know, that these guys make, and that's why I'm blessed to be in the place I am right now.
That's awesome. Do you have guys that you consider like your primary training partners there? I mean, are there people you normally go with, or
yeah,
is it just kind of the whole team?
Yeah. Usually Sergio Pettis. He's fighting Henry Cejudo here in a couple weeks, I think June or something. And then Chico Camus, that's another. He was a UFC vet and a great training partner. You know, pushes me every time we go. He's probably fighting in LFA here. So, mm-hmm. And then we got tons of up-and-comers. We got Nate Jennerman, you know, Emmanuel Sanchez, who fights for Bellator, you know, Anthony Pettis, of course, Eric Koch, Chris Wright, Ode Osborne, and, you know, we're – or Paul Felder also. At Rufus Sport, we kind of got a close-knit group. You know, it's not the biggest – we don't have the most fighters in the world, but we definitely have some good quality fighters in there, you know, some top-level athletes and people that really know what they're doing. You're not going there getting an easy round, you know. You're not going in there kind of running over some of the people. So, yeah, so that's pretty much my training group, though.
That's awesome, man. Well, listen, this is a big fight for you for sure, man. I think, you know, a win here, I think, is going to get you a lot of attention, man. So definitely wish you the best luck. Any last thoughts, messages, anything like that you want to make sure we get across for you?
No, can I have a shout out to sponsors and Twitter and Instagram and stuff? Or
absolutely.
Is that not a
absolutely?
Okay. I would like to thank Combat Corner, DC Mouth Guard, BB Roofing, J. Kurtz Painting, Brothers Moving, and Wheelscape or B Leaf Wheelscaping. And then if you guys want to give me a follow at Rafion Stats on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook.
Awesome, brother. All right, man. Well, wish you the best of luck. We'll definitely be watching, and I appreciate the time, man. All right, so Rafion Stotts, fighter that maybe may not be on your radar right now, but maybe should be. Maybe should be. He has got a tough fight in Robert Emerson, man. Robert Emerson may be fighting better than he ever has in his career right now. But Stotts, to me, looks like the real deal. This is, like I said, somebody I just kind of wanted to write about and hopefully put on your radar if he wasn't there already. A lot of MMA to watch this weekend, man. I'm going to be actually recapping Victory FC 56 for MMA Junkie on Friday night. We've got a couple people working on Friday night because you got Bellator 177 that's airing as well. You got LFA as well on Friday. So three different fight cards you can watch on Friday. UFC on Fox 24, which is freaking loaded, man. I love this card. It's free. No pay-per-view. Good Lord, man. This card is good. And then Risen, if you want to watch Risen. Now, that's a pay-per-view. But if you want to watch that, it'd be late Saturday night, basically at 2 a.m. Eastern, I think, when it starts. And it's $15 on Fight TV. So that is pay-per-view. A lot of MMA to watch this weekend. So, okay, so listen, before Cold Coffee went out of town, he and I did some additional work together this weekend. I can't talk about it yet, but I do want to say we had somebody tell us this alleged Cody Garbrandt knocking out TJ Dillashaw video does exist. This is somebody that's not associated with either fighter. Not associated with either team, said they saw the video footage. Said they saw the video footage. So put on your detective hat. Got to figure out how to get to the bottom of this. I don't know. I think it's kind of weird. I mean, TJ's come straight out and said if it exists, just post it. I don't think it happened. I don't remember it happening. This person says they saw it. I don't know. All right, speaking of Garbrandt and Dillashaw, the Ultimate Fighter 25, the debut of that is kicking off very soon. I'm going to say I'm going to be watching it. You know, a lot of seasons, I'm not going to lie, a lot of seasons of the Ultimate Fighter I've watched because I had to. I used to have to recap all the episodes for years and years and years. Lately, that fun has fallen to Mike Bond. I don't know if it will go to Simon Simano now that he's kind of the new guy. Maybe he will. So there were a couple seasons where, yeah, I was watching because I had to. But this one is one that I am looking forward to watching. I think it's intriguing bringing these guys back. A lot of the personalities that have been in there. I'm excited to see him back. And we've got interviews with a lot of them. A handful of them, I should say. Not a lot of them. But several of them. And we'll be rolling those out on the week of the debut, which is the week of the Nashville card. So next week. We'll roll out a bunch of those interviews, kind of get you keyed up, get you previewed for that. But I will say, again, speaking to some people that are not involved in promoting the UFC and not involved in talking to the media and trying to sell us on anything, I did talk to somebody that was there for – I've actually talked to multiple people that have been there for most of the fights, if not all of the fights, when the season was being taped. And said it's actually got some really good fights. So anxious to see that. I can't imagine there's going to be much drama in the house. But since I don't watch the damn show for drama in the house, I think that's fine. You know, now that these guys have been there before, I can't imagine that they're going to be, you know, wilding out in the house. So I got to imagine it's going to be pretty pedestrian, I guess we'll say, you know, pretty lame, if you will. But that's fine with me because, you know, I mean, a little goofiness here and there is all right. But, you know, I'm not there to watch, you know, I was going to say the first thing that came to mind was splooging in the fruit. and the sushi. But, God, why was that the first thing that came to mind? That's the kind of stuff I'm not there for. I'm there to watch the fights. So I'm anxious for this. All right, one other thing that happened this week, Nevada State Athletic Commission meeting, where the one and only Nate Diaz received a new settlement similar to Conor McGregor, whose fine and community service was reduced when they decided to rehear the UFC 202 issues. Nate Diaz was already brought up, and his fine and hours were reduced as well. I think the amazing thing about this is that Nate had already paid it. So he'd already paid his $50,000 fine. Now they've got to cut him a check for $35,000. How do you like that? The Nevada State Athletic Commission is going to be writing Nate Diaz a check for $35,000. And these Diaz brothers, man, they stick it to the NSAC. Now, I doubt anybody at the NSAC is actually right. I'm sure this will come from the state's general fund. But they got to issue him a refund. How crazy is that? Listen, I think this was a good move by the commission. Yeah, you know, I think pretty much everybody agreed the initial stuff was overboard. You know, I never thought the percentage thing was overboard. I did think that the problem is this. There's no set standard, and I think that's the issue. So it does seem very subjective, whatever you do. It's like you're just picking an arbitrary number. I did think the fact that the number was higher than you would expect is not such a bad thing because they both made so much money from the fight. And I think – and I contend, and I still do, as unpopular as it may be, I think a sliding scale of percentages is fine. To me personally, I think it's fine because, I mean, how is that fair to say, well, we're going to charge $5,000 – you know, if you have some kind of incident. Well, you got a guy that makes $5,000. Obviously, you just took his whole purse. You got a guy that makes $5 million. He doesn't even notice you took $5,000. So, you know, if you want the punishment to have the same effect, you've got to make it equal, right? So I don't really have a problem with it. But, you know, the fact that they don't really have a standard and it's just kind of the way the whole thing went down, I'm okay with it being reduced. I did think it was pretty funny, though, that basically they had the whole thing worked out before the meeting, and that's fine. It's not that like they need to wait for the meetings to get these things set up and to work out deals. They've got to be able to negotiate behind closed doors and work these things out and have, you know, meetings and telephone conversations and all that. Doesn't have to all play out in front of everybody. But, you know, they had agreed to have Nate Diaz on the phone from Hawaii. He was in Hawaii enjoying himself during this meeting. Certainly no need for him to come all the way to Vegas for that. But they agreed to have him on the phone, and then he didn't even bother to be on the phone. So, I don't know. It's funny because, I mean, I feel like the NSAC was trying to do everything they could to make this thing right, and then basically Nate Diaz just kind of sticks it to him, just shows he doesn't care at all enough to even, like, be on the phone. So, it was 6 a.m. in the morning in Hawaii, so maybe he was asleep, maybe he was just coming in, who knows, but it was just kind of a funny scene. I thought that, you know, the NSAC is basically admitting wrongdoing. They're going to write this man a check for $35,000, and he can't even be on the phone. So, crazy. All right, UFC on Fox 24. Cole Coffey is out there in Kansas City. We've had good coverage all week long. Matt Erickson has been out there with him. Simon Samano is out there with him. They did some work yesterday. Jacare and Robert Whittaker. Love this fight. Love this fight, man. Jacare, you got to feel like he's the right pick, right? I mean, this guy certainly, you know, deserving of another shot maybe at Yoel Romero, certainly deserving of a big fight. He's been outspoken and critical of Michael Bisping for not taking the fights that matter the most. Robert Whittaker, man, he just keeps proving people wrong over and over again. I thought he was doomed just going up to the middleweight division. I'm not going to lie. I thought, what is this guy doing? He is a welterweight at best. And what are you doing going up to 185 pounds? And what does he do but just keep rattling off win after win after win? Five-fight winning streak now. Six-fight winning streak now, right? Yeah, six fights. Amazing, man. And this is a huge opportunity. I'm just 26 years old. This is a big moment for him. You wonder if this could be one that sneaks up on Jacare. But I picked Jacare here in my staff picks. I think this is I think he's the better athlete. I think he's the better fighter. Certainly his submission game is incredible. Robert Whittaker saying, yeah, well, thank God it's not a jiu-jitsu match. You know, we're fighting. So we'll see. I love that fight. Renato Moicano, Jeremy Stephens kicking off the main card there on Fox, live and free. You can just get antennas, man. You don't even have to have cable. You can just have antennas. How about the preliminary card on Fox as well? Roy Nelson, Alexander Volkov. Have you seen Roy Nelson? Man, if you haven't been following him on social media, he is blasting the UFC at every opportunity he gets, basically saying, you know, they're not promoting me whatsoever. They're not doing anything. And he's retweeting people that are saying, oh, I didn't even know you were fighting. Glad to hear about it. You know, they're not promoting you at all. And he's like, yeah, because the UFC sucks. Man, you know, if this is a negotiating tactic, I don't know. I get the feeling that Roy is trying to just burn through his contract and head on over to Bellator. Certainly, he's had some tense negotiations with the UFC over the year, tense relationships over the years. But I get the feeling Big Country is trying to burn bridges. We'll see how that plays out. Alexander Volkov didn't necessarily look great last time out. Argue that he lost the fight. But we'll see how this one plays out. I think this is a big fight for Roy Nelson. Roy's marketable regardless. I think he can go to Bellator regardless. But, you know, every win counts when you're trying to negotiate. So, Tom Dukinwah, everybody is high on that kid against Patrick Williams. Bobby Green, Rashid Magomedov. Bobby Green, always vocal. Told Matt Erickson he was just trying to avoid baby mama drama. Said he has three kids with a black girl, a white girl, and a Mexican girl. And he has a girlfriend right now. God damn it. Bless you, Bobby Green. Tim Elliott versus Lewis Smoker. I like that fight at flyweight as well. And then five fights on UFC Fight Pass with, I think, the crown jewel there being Tanquinho Mendes. Augusto Mendes versus Aljamain Sterling. I really, really like that fight on UFC Fight Pass. So I think this card, UFC on Fox 24, is going to be a lot of fun. I love the fact that it's on Fox because it's over by 7 p.m. Pacific, which is awesome. I still end up having to work later. Even though I'm working from home, I'll be writing working on the post-fight stuff and working on all that. But, man, it's so much better than getting over 3 hours later, so. West Coast Fox shows are the best. And even though this was in the Central Time Zone, since I'm not on the road, it's a West Coast Fox show for me. Then I'll even have time to get together and do a little and a half episode. Maybe I can get Cold Coffee to chime in from his Airbnb out there in Kansas City. We'll figure it out. We'll make something happen. And then we'll be back together next week in Nashville to really get things going. All right, so UFC on Fox 24, I'm not there. Don't look for the blue shirt. Make bets if you want. Say that I'm not there. I'll get back on the road next week. Okay, carrying on with Victory FC 56, since I will be covering that show on Friday night, just watching it on Fight Pass, but I'm writing up the recap. Another guy that I'm pretty high on, and he's very young in his career, but Sadiq Youssef, to me, looks like the real deal, fighting out of Team Lloyd Irvin, and I wanted to kind of get to know him a little bit more, just do an interview with him. I'd never talked to the guy before. Got him on the phone for the first time, and turns out this guy has an incredible, incredible, incredible story. Made me like the guy even more. I liked him before just for his physical talents. Thought he looked like a potential, you know, star in his capabilities. And then he gets in and tells this story. And I got to say, I don't know how you don't cheer for the guy now. So, I don't know. Check it out. You know, another guy that maybe you haven't heard of, put him on your radar. You know, I could have played you some Demetrius Johnson audio or some Michelle Watterson audio or maybe some stuff from the Nevada State Athletic Commission, but I thought, you know what? Give these guys a little bit of shine. You guys are hardcore fans. Maybe you want to hear from somebody new. Give you a reason to watch. Here, Mr. Super Sadiq Youssef. Let's just get started, man. I want to kind of get a little bit of your background. You were born in Nigeria, right? When did you come over to the United States?
Yeah, I was born in Lagos, Nigeria. I came here when I was 9, with just me and my little brother. We came here. We came to join our mom. She saved up a little bit of money to fly us out here. She came here 3 years before us.
Wow. What did she do to pay the bills, to save money to get you guys over?
You know, back then she wasn't really a legal citizen, so it was like just small jobs. I think she was braiding hair, and she was sleeping on my uncle's couch in the living room. So she used the money she made from braiding hair and little small jobs she could find around under the table to save up money for me and my brothers.
That's pretty amazing. You got to have a lot of respect for her for doing that.
Oh yeah, that's my hero right there, man. That's one of my idols.
That's awesome. Well, all right. So you come over to the United States. You're 9 years old. What's life like for you at that point? I mean, how do you get involved in athletics? I mean, what's it like for you?
Nah, when we first came here, it was kind of a big culture shock. You know, I still had a pretty thick Nigerian accent. Went through a little bit of bullying, but I think around fifth grade when I got into my first fight, that kind of ended. And I went through like a little bad streak of when I was just solving all my problems through, hey, let me just fight it out because then they'll stop messing with me. But around high school, I smartened up a little bit.
That's awesome. Well, how'd you get into official training? I mean, so you were street fighting. Did you ever think, man, maybe I could make a career out of this someday?
Nah, it wasn't necessarily street fighting. Just mostly just like stuff in school. But I saw the UFC on TV when I was, I think, in like the fifth grade or something like that. The moment I saw the UFC, I was like, oh man, that's what I'm gonna do when I grow up. I remember around the time, like, nobody in my neighborhood knew anything about MMA or anything like that, but I think it was a season with Nate Diaz, the Ultimate Fighter with Nate Diaz, season 5, and when I saw that on TV, it just instantly stuck, you know, because I was like a big, like, into, like, anime and superheroes and stuff like that, and when I saw people actually fighting in real life, I was like, that's the closest thing you could be to, like, a real-life superhero, and I was telling everybody from then on, I was like, oh, man, that's what I'm going to do when I grow up. I'm going to be in the UFC. I've been telling people I was going to be in the UFC since freaking middle school.
Talk about, I guess, the steps you took to get there. I mean, did you figure out, hey, I need to enroll in martial arts academy, or what did you do?
Well, here's the thing. I always told people I was going to do that, but I didn't know which way to go from step one to step two at all. My family was real poor and stuff, so yeah, there wasn't going to be any martial arts for me. I couldn't afford that. But when I was in high school, I was just listening to the commentators and I heard them say something about high school wrestling, and I was like, man, I wonder if my school has wrestling. And I went to go check with like the AD and stuff like that, and it turns out we had wrestlers in school, but coming to my area, you know, like, wrestling is not a big sport. You're not going to hear about most of people going out wrestling. You know, it's a black neighborhood, and nobody, there's only 4 guys on the team. So I went out and tried for the wrestling team, but at this point, I didn't really have my head on right, and my grades was too bad. To make it on the wrestling team, you have to have higher than the 2.0 and no E's. I know that sounds pretty easy, but I wasn't really applying myself at the time, and I didn't have the grades. So I couldn't wrestle until my 11th grade year, my sophomore year. I mean, my junior year. So I was able to make it. I got my grades a lot better the next year, and I started wrestling. I wrestled my junior year, and I wrestled my senior year, and right after that, I came to Lloyd's.
That's awesome. So really, just the desire to be on the wrestling team was what got your head straight?
Well, yeah, that's what got my grades. It wasn't like it wasn't like I was like stupid or anything, but I never really applied myself. I didn't know which direction I was going in. I didn't want anything to do with school, honestly. But once I needed grades for wrestling, it was easy. You know, I was even having to make grades for wrestling brought my regular grades up too, you know.
So then you get out of high school, and what's the next step? I mean,
I got out of high school, and at this point, I'm not a citizen, you know. So I didn't have the legal documents to be able to go straight into college. So I spent a full year just on my butt doing nothing, you know. But my mom at this time, my mom was able to. Be legalized, and then she filed for us, and then I was able to be legalized. I went to Bowie University for a semester and a half, but I wanted nothing to do with college, honestly. I was just there to make my mom happy. And whenever people was asking me what I was going to school for, I was like, I'm going to school for my mom, and that was the only thing. And then I saw Mike Easton fight on in the UFC, a UFC that came to Washington, D.C., and he was talking about, oh, he trains at Lloyd Irvin's martial arts. And at the gym was super far away from Bladensburg. Lloyd Irvin's is at Temple Hill. And from Bladensburg, if you were to take a car, it's only like a 25-minute drive. But I didn't have a car back and I couldn't drive, and I had to take the bus. The only problem was the bus was like a three-hour ride. If I was to take the train, I could probably get there. And if I I'd get there in like an hour, if I could take the train, but the train was cost $12, and we didn't have a lot of money, so I had to take the bus instead. The bus would only be $3. $12 over $3 are a big difference, you know, especially when you're broke. So I got on that bus the first day. I was like, all right, we're going to do this. I put in my headphones, listened to my podcast, and it was a three-hour bus ride. Not 3 hours one way. It was only 3 hours because I had to go from one station to the next station and wait for another bus and then wait and do all that stuff. I came here, and I signed up. And the moment I signed up, man, I was just stuck, and I was addicted, you know. I'll do my regular classes, and after my regular beginner's classes, I just sit on the side and watch all the advanced people go, and they used to call me the jiu-jitsu stalker. That was my nickname here, because I just used to look like a creep sitting around on the sidelines waiting for someone to let me in. I did that for like a good 5 months until one day Massimo let me join the class because they had an odd number. And they were like, hey, you want to be a drill partner or blah, blah, blah. I was like, oh, man, yeah, like, no problem. And after they was done drilling, they let me have one role with DJ. And from then on, he started letting me join the class from time to time. Sometimes I'll show up and I just sit there, be the judicial stalker. Sometimes they'll let me into the class. And from then on, it just kept going like that until I was the standard on the mat.
You're, you know, watching your fights, man. I think you must have been a striking stalker as well, man, because your hands look good. I mean, you got the whole package. So I guess, I mean, you've taken to all aspects of MMA.
Yeah, 100%, man. The only reason why my strike has been such a display is because all the fight starts on the feet. But trust me, the ground game is there too. My gym is a jiu-jitsu gym. Like, I don't want people to get it twisted like I'm just a striker out there. I come from a jiu-jitsu gym. It's just the way I see it, my boxing coach, Coach Fox, used to tell me, if they can't find the answer to the first question, there's no need to keep asking them more questions. So if the fight starts striking, if they don't find an answer for that, there's no reason to change it.
That's awesome, man. That's a great way to look at it. Well, you've been pro pretty much right at about one full year now. So, I mean, look great. 3 wins so far. What's this first year been like for you, man? Have you been able to accomplish what you wanted to accomplish?
Yeah. The first year is going exactly how I thought it would go, man. I've been, for the past 5 years that I've been training here, I've been working my ass off, you know. So the moment I turned pro, this was kind of what I expected, and it's been going along well. I'm hoping that next year brings the same thing. I'm going to try to get as much fights as I can and to make a name out there, get people to start looking at me.
Yeah, from what I've heard, you want to fast track to the UFC. You want to be at the highest level as soon as possible.
Yeah, 100%, man. Like, I think I can compete with a lot of guys that are in the UFC right now. The only reason why I'm not there is because of experience, you know. But I've put in the mat hours. I don't have the experience they do, but if you add up the amount of times I put in on a mat, it equals to most people, you know. I train almost 6 or 7, 8 hours a day, 6, 5 days a week, and on the weekends I train only 3 hours. But that's been my same consistent schedule for about 5 years. So long term, when you look at it like what the years wise, I don't have that much experience. But if you look at my mat time, my experience is off the roof.
Did you end up moving closer to the gym? You still making that journey? What's it like now?
Oh, no, I didn't finish the story. No. So I was making my 3 hour bus ride for a while, and then one day Max Lloyd called me up. He said, hey, what are you doing, blah blah blah. Like, what are you doing with your life? And I'm like, are you really trying to pursue this MMA stuff? And I was like, yeah. I told him I'm in school. But the only reason I'm in school, literally the only reason I'm in school, was for my mom, because I was just trying to keep her happy. And then he said, if well, if school doesn't work out, I have an opportunity for you. And then that was literally my last day going to school. that was the last day I went to school. I didn't. My brother still makes fun of me to this day. He was like, man, you didn't but like drop out like the right way. You didn't go cancel your classes. I just didn't show up the next day. I didn't show up to school the next day. And I didn't show up to my job at Pizza Hut the next day. Matt Lloyd said I could move into the fighter house. And at the fighter house was like a little bit, it was like super close to the gym. I didn't drive at the time, but there were other fighters in the house that drove. There were other jiu-jitsu guys that drove, and they'll just give me rides from the gym back to the house. And I'll show up to the gym in the morning, like around 10, and I'll just stay there the whole day until someone's ready to leave again at 12 at night. And that was my schedule for a good 2 years until I finally got my driver's license and I was able to drive myself. But honestly, that's still kind of what I do now.
That's amazing, man. So are you still in the fighter? So you're still in the fighter house now?
Yes, sir.
What's the motivation then? I mean, obviously, you know, you want to be at the highest level. I mean, is it the glory? Is it the money? I got to imagine maybe taking care of mom is in there somewhere.
Yeah. 100% is everything that you mentioned, man. It's like I honestly, my mom always says there has to be a reason why we came to this country. You know, we suffered a lot. You know, there's a lot of times where we was almost homeless. So I don't want to sound like the Mr. I'm doing this just for the money guy, but I honestly think my talent is enough for me to be able to earn this type of money that I want to, and I'll be able to have my mom live comfortably, you know. And my talent is there. I work hard. I definitely work hard. Anybody that knows me will anybody that you ever talk to that knows me, they'll tell you I work hard. I put the work in, and I think I deserve it, you know. It's just a matter of time. I'm not in a rush or anything, but I'd like for it to happen sooner than later.
All right, Sadiq Yusuf, somebody else to maybe put on your radar, fighting Raider. Maybe put him on your radar or your Raider if you want to do that. Fighting at Victory FC 58. Again, you know, early in his career, he's only 3-0 right now, so no guarantees of anything. But the guy looks like he's got potential, and he's got an amazing story just to get where he is. So it'd be great to see what he does. All right, you know, we talked about UFC on Fox 24 being a great card. Man, speaking of great cards, you guys see the lineup for UFC 211? Good Lord. Good Lord. In my hometown of Dallas, Texas, May 13th, if you haven't checked that out, check it out. It is a good-looking lineup. Man. You got Eddie Alvarez versus Dustin Poirier fighting on prelims. Jason Knight and Chaz Skelly. I love that fight on the prelims. You know we like Jason Knight. God, Frankie Edgar, Yair Rodriguez on the main card. Gotta love that, man. Dude, gotta love that. Anyway. That lineup's sick. I just wanted to throw that out there because it is in my hometown of Dallas, Texas. Very cool because that is May the 13th. May the 12th is actually my son's birthday. He'll be 5 years old, so I'm going to bring my family back to Dallas and get to be in my hometown for my son's fifth birthday, which means my parents, Eli's grandparents, will get to celebrate his fifth birthday with them. And, man, get to go there for an awesome lineup of fights. So looking forward to that. Also, hey, did you see Jimmy Manuel? We were talking about Jimmy Manuel earlier with Daniel Cormier. Did you see Jimmy Manuel stopping by the MMA Junkie Radio Studios this week? Good interview there. Wants to fight Cormier. Says he's taking it kind of personal and wants to fight. Again, I think Cormier kind of wants to do that fight too if Jon Jones isn't available. I don't think Cormier wants to sit around and wait on Jon Jones. But I thought it was cool how it came together. I happened to be sitting up and saw Jimmy Manuel tweet that he was in Las Vegas and sent a message to George, and George reached out to his people, and in came Jimmy Manuel, completely unexpected. He was on vacation here with his family. I imagine there's probably a little bit of business being done as well, but, you know, he's here on vacation and was able to stop by the MMA Junkie Radio studio. So there was a good story there, man. He's starting to embrace the role of talking a little bit, putting some stuff out there, so... That was cool. I was glad that I could play a little small part in helping the MMA Junkie Radio guys get him on for the week. So other great stuff from this week, too, if you didn't see UFC 212. The tickets are on sale. Of course, that is the card in Rio de Janeiro, or Rio, if you will. Fernanda Prates, our Brazilian reporter, was on site there doing some camera work, doing some one-on-one interviews there, shooting them and doing the on screen by herself. So good stuff there. Some great content came out of there. First of all, Jose Aldo admitting that he learned from Conor McGregor. How hard must it have been for him to say that? Now, he didn't phrase it exactly that way. He said he learned from, I guess, the money that he made in the Conor McGregor fight, that that things are changing, that there's no doubt about it. The business is changing. He has to admit it. You got to sell fights, right? You got to talk a little trash to sell fights, and he says he's down with it. So he's embracing that a little bit, and he says that, you know, he's got some plans. It's crazy because Aldo has always been just so adamantly opposed to talking trash or to being disrespectful. Always wanted to be the good guy, the guy that got it right and said things the right way and did things the right way. He always wanted to be that guy. And, you know, now he's saying that that's going to change. So I thought that was pretty cool that he was able to admit that. And good for him. You know what I mean? He can't fight forever. And, you know, he had youth on his side for a long time. But, you know, that winning streak went away. And this is a big fight for him. And now he's saying, you know, there's some lightweight challenges on the horizon. He's got everything all mapped out. And he's going to start being a little bit more vocal. So thought that was really cool. And, of course, Max Holloway. Max Holloway brought a soccer ball as a little bit of sign of trash talk there. He said, you know, you've always said that when you retire, maybe you want to do something with soccer. Well, I'm going to give you a soccer ball because, Mr. Aldo, you're going to be retired after this fight. So I loved him going at it a little bit. You know, it fell a little bit flat. I think when you have to translate trash talk, it loses a little bit of its spice there. But good for Max Holloway. Good guy, man. Dude's on a 10-fight winning streak, interim champ. Oh, man, I love this fight. I can't wait to get down to Rio for that fight. It's part of it. So after Dallas, then there's going to be a four-week stretch where we do Stockholm, Rio, Auckland, and Singapore in back-to-back-to-back-to-back weeks. So that is going to be a nutty stretch. But that is one of the best fights in that stretch. There's no doubt about it. I cannot wait. And the other one, Anderson Silva. Still without an opponent. Anderson Silva saying that, you know, he'll you know, he's kind of up to fight whoever and you know, but it's got to mean something. He wants to, you know, Yoel Romero, he'll fight him because that means something. Then you got Malky Cabo who comes out and says Anderson turned him down. Doesn't want to fight Vitor Belfort because it doesn't really mean anything. You know, doesn't want to do rematches. Doesn't want to do – so, you know, kind of trying to pick his – I'll be honest with you. And, you know, I was talking with Fernanda Prates about this as well. I wouldn't be surprised if he falls off that card. They pay him a lot of money. They pay Anderson Silva a lot of money. And, you know, right now, you still got time. You're just under 2 months. But, you know, how many big, meaningful fights are out there right now? I don't know. I don't know if there's that many. And he's turning down some of them. You know, Fernandez has said over and over she thinks the Vitor Belfort fight would make a lot of sense for the market. Now, maybe not for, you know, Anderson saying it doesn't make sense for him because, you know, he beat Vitor so convincingly the first time. What can he do the second time that's not going to be a step down? And, of course, Vitor said he doesn't want to fight a fellow Brazilian. I think he wants to have the crowd on his side. You know, I think that he wants to be the hero that night. You know what I mean? To have everybody cheering for him. And that's why he doesn't want to face another Brazilian. And that's fine, man. The guy's been fighting for 20 years. He wants to go out, you know, in that manner. So, can't blame him for that. But, you know, that would be a huge fight for the market. You know, that was the fight that kind of kicked off the boom in Brazil, the current boom. And it should be special the second time around for them. I don't know if there's a lot of fights that make sense for Anderson Silva right now. And if they're not already booked and you know they're paying him a lot of money, I don't think they want to put together some crap fight. I don't think the UFC wants to do that. I think if they're going to do that, they'd rather move him to another card. So as the days go by and we don't hear anything, it makes me nervous that fight's going to be canceled. So we'll see. Pay attention to that. Still a great card. Anderson Holloway, on its own. That's enough for me. I'm sold. That's enough reason for me to get on a plane. And let's be honest, to sit on the beach at night and have a frosty beverage out on the beach doesn't take much for me to get down there anyway. Claudia Gadella versus Carolina Kowalkiewicz. Come on, that's a pretty good fight. I'm down for that too. Yancy Medeiros versus Eric Silva could be fun. You know, Eric, man, when he's on, he's on. Same thing with Yancy. When he's on, he's on. Could be fun. Johnny Eduardo, Matthew Lopez. Could be a fun little scrap. It takes a little trip down. Eric Spicy's on there. You know Eric Spicy wants to talk some trash. Fighting Shoe Face, that could be a fun fight. I was like, all right, there's a couple of nuggets on there. But Anderson is star power. Anderson is star power. So we'll see. All right, well, listen, rolling solo. I know you get tired of hearing my voice. If you did like what you hear, do me a favor. Go into iTunes and give me some feedback if you haven't done it before. Rate us. Review us, even if it's just me. We're now trying to do SoundCloud a little more. I'm learning about SoundCloud. It's good stuff, right? Seems easy to use. If you're just listening on your computer, you just click on a little thing there. I dig it. Give us some feedback there if you want. I don't even know where the feedback is, but I'll look for it. And well, I won't keep you too long this week. I hate when my man Cold Coffee's not here. I know you get tired of hearing me just talk. I'm tired of listening to myself talk at this point. So if you made it this far, just listen to me ramble. Let me say I appreciate the hell out of you. We'll have the band back together next week. We'll do some kind of and a half episode this week. We'll figure something out. In the meantime, thanks for listening. We'll be right back.